The Saudi Lid Wall, this exhibition proves that art and creativity are still alive in Yemen. Organizers say the exhibition gives a clear idea of suffering millions of Yemenis have endured. It is also an attempt to revive the conscience of the world, which has seemingly died along with hundreds of thousands of innocent Yemenis. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana.
A two-day summit of European Union leaders in Versailles, France, to discuss Russia's military operation in Ukraine concluded with increasingly belligerent rhetoric, possibly overshadowing the rejection of concrete sanctions. Led by the Eastern members of the bloc, the EU will not impose sanctions on Russian gas and oil. In mid-May, a proposal could be unveiled to phase out Russian fossil fuels by 2027. The Western members of the bloc led the swift rejection of Ukraine's appeal for fast-track membership to the bloc. The EU and NATO claim they have excluded direct military intervention in Ukraine. The EU did double to 1 billion euros the amount of military aid for Ukraine. It's the first such military involvement for the bloc, which was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in 2012.
There have been three strategic objectives which Russia did not anticipate. First, the resurrection of NATO. Second, the awakening of Europe. And third, the unity of Ukrainians. I think the Russians had a bad strategy.
Some in Europe are saying that Russia's military action is on the same level as 9/11 and that the EU must bolster cooperation on defense and drastically boost military spending.
Europe needs its own army. After the 1980s, Europe became disarmed and completely reliant on the Americans. Ukraine is the door to Europe, and now Europe has no choice but to arm itself. Europe needs to reconceptualize its own image into one where they can defend themselves.
If the EU follows through on some of these promises and sanctions, Europe will likely see a multi-year effect on prices of food, energy, and basic goods. The green transition, which some think is so vital, will likely need to be reversed. The summit ends much as it began. It's not fully clear how far the EU will go to get involved in the conflict between Russia and Ukraine. A poll last month showed that two-thirds of France is favorable to organizing a referendum on leaving the European Union. If massive and controversial changes aren't approved by a democratic vote, it's possible that the EU may be fomenting even more discord. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
As Yemenis experienced the worst fuel shortage since the beginning of the Saudi Lid War in 2015, Yemen's petroleum company held a press conference to highlight the impact of the Saudi piracy acts in the Red Sea.
In 2021, the Saudi-led coalition prevented entry of fuel needed to meet 95% of the general need for fuel. This shows that the Saudi-led coalition uses fuel as a pressure card amid the ongoing war. This is a clear violation of the international humanitarian law. The situation is dangerous, especially with the rise of oil prices internationally due to the Russian-Ukrainian conflict.
Officials say the purpose of the Saudi-led coalition seize of fuel ships is to raise the price of fuel and spread chaos in the country.
The Saudi-led coalition is continuing its siege intending to raise fuel prices. They believe the rise in fuel prices will force people to go out to the streets and protest. But the Yemenis have proven to the Saudi-led coalition that they know who causes the fuel crisis and they hold the United Nations responsible for its continued silence.
Besides the war, Saudi Arabia and its allies have imposed an all-out blockade on Yemen since March 2015. The United Nations describes Yemen as the world's worst humanitarian crisis, but it has not taken any action to end the suffering of millions of Yemenis.
Experts believe Saudi Arabia's recent measures to block Yemen's fuel imports are yet another proof that the Saudi military operation against Yemen is a failure. And they also say the Russia-Ukraine conflict has exposed the international community's double standard on humanitarian crisis. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana.
Back on March 11, 2012, a U.S. Army sergeant horrifically killed at least 16 civilians, including 9 children, and wounded 6 others in Panjwayi district of Kandahar province. Today, Afghans recall the killings as shocking and inhuman, saying they can't forget about the U.S. war crimes in their country.
Around 10 years ago, a terrifying shooting was carried out on my relatives in the Zangawad village in Kandahar. It was like a nightmare. I can't forget it. American forces opened fire on civilians, including children and women. We did protests against the U.S. and didn't let them sweep it under the carpet. Americans should be held accountable for their war crimes in Afghanistan.
Syed Ishaq Gilani was a former Afghan MP. He led the Afghan team to investigate the Panjwayi mass killing. He denies an individual act, saying it was planned and more Americans were involved.
Throughout our investigation, we found out that there was more than one shooter. We saw 20 footprints of the American forces at the scenes of crimes. The incident was shocking and tragic. It looked like a group of U.S. soldiers had done that. Then they blamed everything on one of their drunk teammates. The U.S. forces threatened the local people not to tell us the truth.
Sardar Muhammad, the lawyer of the victim's family, says that the U.S. Army threatened him and didn't let him pursue the file.
After the mass killing, the victim's family chose me as the lawyer. At a 2 rounds of trial, the American sergeant Robert Bales was sentenced to death, and it was what the family wanted. But before going to the last trial, Americans threatened me because I was insisting on execution of the murderer. I don't know what happened in the last trial, as the Americans selected one of themselves as the lawyer of the victim's families instead of me.
After 20 years of invasion, the U.S. and its allies hastily abandoned Afghanistan in mid-August last year, leaving Afghans with sad and heartbreaking memories. People in Afghanistan associate the U.S. invasion of their country with destruction, nightraids, and rights violation. They say the U.S. should be held accountable for its war crimes in Afghanistan. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
At the Palace of Versailles, famed as the seat of absolute autocracy and anti-democracy, the leaders of the European Union met in order to discuss possibly historic reversals of long-standing policies as a response to the conflict between Russia and Ukraine.
The challenge is to leave the summit with a firm declaration that a peak of new sanctions is reached, that they will be applied, and that everyone is ready to move towards the same decisions, such as freezing assets of both the Russian central bank and private banks, sanctions on those close to Europe, and reducing gas purchases.
Russia is the biggest supplier of fossil fuels to the European Union, and the meeting will discuss how to reduce as much as 2/3 of its natural gas needs from Russia within a year. That is expected to be extremely painful for businesses and households and would force a reversal of green energy policies, which many European politicians have insisted were of apocalyptic importance for many years. One of the key arguments often used to defend the EU is that it is responsible for an era of European peace. But many say the 2-day conference may provide the foundations for a new European army. For the first time, the EU has sent lethal weapons, even though the bloc won the Nobel Peace Prize in 2012. More than half of Europe has already sent arms to Ukraine, further escalating the conflict.
There needs to be a form of strategic autonomy, which Macron keeps repeating. And if not independence, then less dependence from both Washington and Moscow. The consequences of this conflict will be felt on Europe, so Europe needs to show unprecedented unity and swiftness.
To fund these changes, the leaders are discussing a potentially massive bond sale similar to the bloc's $2 trillion COVID rescue fund, and which they refused to do during the age of austerity. The latest round of Russia-Ukraine peace talks in Turkey failed to make any progress at all. The fallout from the conflict in the Ukraine is provoking massive shifts in historical developments and with a rapidity that few imagine possible. If the two countries can't make peace soon, the world may look very different very quickly. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Nigerians under the umbrella of the concerned Abuja indigenes said the Nigerian government's refusal to release the travel documents of Sheikh Ibrahim Al-Zazaki and his wife Zinat is part of the unjustifiable oppression of the Islamic cleric and his wife. The group said Sheikh Ibrahim Al-Zazaki has been brutalized in Zaria in December 2015, resulting in the murder of his six sons and thousands of his followers. They said the Islamic cleric has remained resolute and law-abiding, so there is need for the court to resolve the issue of his travel documents immediately.
Do we expect him dead before the judgment concluded? This is what we are talking about. If the court should keep on delaying, consigning the release of the traveling document, what do we do while the sickness keep on eating the body?
The Abuja concerned indigenous said Sheikh Ibrahim Al-Zazaki and his wife Zinat have dangerous levels of lead and cadmium in their blood and needed to be hospitalized. They said delaying the medical trip of Sheikh Zazaki and his wife Zinat is an infringement on their rights.
The Constitution of Nigeria has given every individual a right to express, right of movement, right to medication, right of everything. Socially. So if right has been given to every individual citizen of the country, why is Sheikh being deprived?
A Kaduna High Court had freed Sheikh Zazaki and his wife Zinat since July 28, 2021. The Islamic cleric and his wife had dragged the Nigerian government to court over its refusal to release their passports to go for medical treatment abroad. Danjum Abdullahi, Abuja.
Already struggling with the cost of living crisis, ordinary Europeans are now feeling the pinch at the pump, with the conflict in Ukraine pushing up the already high food and fuel prices. As plans to phase out oil imports from Russia are drawn up, the ripple effects of the Ukraine crisis are being felt across the continent.
Here in London, people are feeling the economic cost of the ongoing military conflict in Ukraine at the gas pump. Prices have been rising steadily since the start of the year and have now hit a record high. And what that means is that it's going to have a knock-on effect on the cost of transporting goods and, by extension, on the already rising cost of living.
Russia is the world's second largest exporter of oil. The EU imports 27% of its oil from Russia, the UK 11%, and the US just 8%, which is why Europe will feel the effect of the bans far more acutely than the U.S. The EU also plans to slash its dependency on Russian gas by two-thirds this year. That's 26% of their supply.
It's hard, bloody hard, but it's possible if we're willing to go further and faster than we've done before.
But to make it possible, experts say the Europeans will have to make difficult compromises.
For the new government in Germany actually now saying, actually, we're going to bring back nuclear. Well, that was one of the key things, that they were going to get rid of nuclear completely, very quickly indeed. Then also coal, getting rid of the coal-burning power stations, and particularly those from maybe the using Polish coal, brown coal, which is incredibly dirty.
But could all this have been prevented? While the U.S. and Europe blame Russia's ongoing military offensive in Ukraine for the soaring energy costs, some experts say it's a crisis that could have been averted.
One of the great things about international affairs is to understand not just what you want to achieve, but what the other side wants to achieve. And where's the middle path? Russia generally would want to have a working relationship to protect its security, to make sure its confidence is there. And you know, instead of necessarily having people who are American allies literally a few hundred miles away from your capital, that's something they're not used to. So really understand their nervousness, now try and work out how to deal with it. But we've left it too late.
The new plans will mean less oil revenues for Russia and a faster transition to cleaner energy. But what it also means is a higher risk of inflation and recession across the continent. Saeed Pourriza, London.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The Supplication on Tuesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, and praise is His right, since Him deserves it, abundant praise. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of my soul, for surely the soul commands to evil, except as my Lord has mercy. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of Satan, who adds sins to my sin. I seek protection with Him from every wicked tyrant and unjust sovereign and conquering enemy. O Allah, place me among Thy troops are the victors, and place me in Thy party, for Thy party are the ones who prosper. And place me among Thy friends, for Thy friends no fear shall be upon them, nor shall they sorrow. O Allah, set right for me my religion, for it is the preserving tie of my affair. Set right for me my hereafter, for it is the abode of my permanent lodging, and to it I flee from the neighborhood of the vile. Make life an increase for me in every good, and death an ease for me from every evil. O Allah, bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and the completion of the number of the envoys, and his household, the good, the pure, and his household, the good, the pure, and his companions, the distinguished. And give me on the Tuesday three things. Leave no sin for me unless Thou forgives it, and leave no grief unless Thou takes it away, and leave no enemy, and leave no enemy unless Thou repelst him. By means of In the Name of Allah, the Best of the Names. In the Name of Allah, Lord of Earth and Heaven, I seek to repulse every hateful thing, the first of which is His anger. And I seek to attract every lovable thing, the first of which is His good pleasure. So seal me with forgiveness from Thee, O Patron of Beneficence.
Bring us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello, welcome to the Spotlight. I'm Kavit Ahway. A barrage of missiles on Israel's Mossad base in Erbil. The IRGC, Iran's Revolution Guards Corps, has claimed responsibility, naming it a missile strike on the strategic center of Zionist conspiracy and evil in the northern Iraqi Kurdistan city of Erbil. It said that this was in response to recent Israeli crimes. The attack comes days after the two IRGC officers were killed in an Israeli airstrike on the Syrian capital, Damascus. In this edition of the Spotlight, we will look at what this means when it comes to Israel's aggression against the Islamic Republic and Iran's response if the regime repeats its acts of aggression. First, let me introduce our guest for this edition of the Spotlight. Joining us is Elijah Magnier, veteran journalist and writer who joins us from Brussels. Also joining us, Mostafa Peshesh, journalist and political commentator, joins us from Tehran.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Gentlemen, welcome to you both. If I may first start with you, Elijah Magnier, and recount what has happened and get your reaction to it, where you have a dozen ballistic missiles to have hit this secret Mossad bases in Erbil. There were several reports out on this. One of them claimed there were several Israeli operatives who were killed maybe as a result of this. But what is your reaction to what has occurred?
Thank you for having me. I think this is one of the most important retaliation Iran had made since a very long time. So the importance of this retaliation is, first of all, the timing. Iran is doing it when there are talk in Vienna saying that the JCPOA is coming to an end. And Iran is saying that I really don't care about what's happening in Vienna when it comes to the national security of the country, and when Israel wants to hit Khorram Shahr, as it has done in mid-February last month, then Iran is going to retaliate. The second message is that Iran has the capability to retaliate when Israel doesn't expect. So after the killing of the two Iranian officers of the IRGC in Syria, Israeli reinforced their anti-missile capability and was on alert in Palestine and on the occupied Golan Heights. So the Iranians hit when the Israelis did not expect, particularly in Erbil, with whom the Israelis have excellent relationship with the Barzani family since the 1950s and the 60s. And another point is Iran is saying that showing how precise its missiles are, launching 12 missiles is in a direct message that it can completely destroy a target, even if it is in the vicinity of the U.S. consulate. It is to another message that Iran is not here to look at the safety of the U.S. consulate, even if the Mossad base is close to the United States diplomatic mission, it is not hitting the United States diplomatic mission, but is saying, I don't care if you support the Israelis, I'm going to hit the target anyway. And also showing the Israeli, the Iranian deterrence capability of hitting the Israeli anytime, anywhere. Uh-huh. And that takes us the seriousness of the Iranian when they said if Israel hit us, they will not find any airport to land because all this airport will be destroyed.
Okay, well, Mossavva Khoshesh, there has been little variations here and there which are paramount or very significant in the way that this was reported. But one of them that I'd like to find out from you is that we had the incident that happened in Syria where you had two IRGC officers that were assassinated, and then you had this occur. Do you see a connection there? And your overall assessment as to what was targeted and the way that it was targeted, especially coming at this time?
Hello, Kaveh. Thanks for having me. As the IRGC statement has implied, they say this is part of Iranian response to the recent Israeli terrorist attack on Iranian. So most probably they mean this is part of Iran's revenge operation for those two IRGC attachés, military attachés in Syria. But this should never be seen as just a single incident or a single response. It comes in the backdrop of several strategic, issues with regard to Iran and the U.S., as well as Iran and the Israeli regime, especially the Israeli regime, that went under attack. This has not been the first Mossad center that has come under attack. Months ago, two more Israeli outposts. One was a training center. The other one was a radio post and a spying tower that went under attack, and they were devastated, and there were several death tolls and casualties reported then. Well, first of all, because of the Israeli regime atrocities ever since it was established by occupying the Palestinian lands, it's been increasingly hostile to its neighbors. And now, in response, it is a good target for the Lebanese resistance forces, as well as the Syrians, and even unoccupied territories, as we witnessed in the last 1 year, and also for those Palestinians living in the Gaza Strip and the West Bank. As a matter of fact, the Israelis have been saying very clearly and eloquently that if they fire the first bullet, they will come under attack from across the Middle East with drones and different types of ballistic missiles, and also with cruise missiles. So they see themselves under siege somehow because of their atrocities and hostilities towards mm-hmm. others in constant wars. So they've been trying to project lands of crisis and tension to territories far from Israel, the occupied territories in close and adjacent to Iran, in the south, in the Persian Gulf, on the southern rims of the Persian Gulf. They've been trying to spread their presence to there, as well as to some regions or territories in north of Iran, as well as lands northwest of Iran, Iraqi Kurdistan province. So this is the strategic issue. That's why the assassination was just a single part of their, that the broader strategy that they are pursuing. A second strategy pertains to the shift in the U.S. exit and expulsion from this region to go to the Far East. So there is a vacuum, and this vacuum was created because of the U.S. failure in the past 20 years in establishing their greater Middle East plan and their hegemonic rule and order in this region, mainly because of Iran, Haj Qasem Soleimani, Martyr, Lieutenant General Soleimani, as well as the IRGC Lots Force. So it's no secret that once they leave the region, Iran's power in this region will grow way faster. So the Israelis have been assigned to do anything they could to slow down the Iranian growth, the resistance front's growth. And they cannot start a war, they know the result would be their devastation in the short term, fast and furious. But they're acting in a space between peace and war that is doing some kind of sabotage attacks, terror and assassination and you know, this kind of moves, and sending and arming and training and integrating terrorist groups towards Iran.
Sure.
So this assassination of the Iranian attachés was just one part. And the response, and that's why we say it's part of the response. The response was one single response within a broader strategy of Iran's confrontation with the Zionist regime of Israel. And I'll explain about it later.
Sure, sure. We'll get to that for sure. But perhaps, Elijah Magner, you somewhat, I think, made maybe a sentence or two relating the relationship that exists between Erbil and Israel, because they do enjoy friendly ties. Just a brief history check, looking at back in 2014 when Israel, for example, bought Kurdish oil despite opposition from the central Iraqi government, mind you, and then 3 years later endorsing an independence referendum that was carried out in the Kurdistan region. Tell us the relationship that exists there to the point where, obviously, where they have a spying center that's run by Mossad in their territory.
Well, the current Kurdish leader, Masoud Barzani, his father used to maintain a very good relationship with Israel in the 50s and the 60s. And when the Americans established a no-fly zone in the, after the Saddam Hussein occupation of Kuwait, the Mossad and the CIA moved to Erbil and have had always a military base in the Kurdish side, in Kurdistan, in Iraq. And when the Americans occupied the rest of Iraq, the Americans and the Israelis maintained this base, and the Kurdish have excellent relationship with the Israelis. We see that with the Kurdish also in Syria, where they also maintain good relationship with Israel. So what's happening now is there is a government in Baghdad that is not capable of maintaining a policy that within the constitution prevent relationship with Israel. And we see that just a couple of months ago, a conference was held in Erbil where Iraqi officials attended it. And also people from Israel were online present and gave a talk. So that's really up to the Iraqi government to just make up its mind and decide if it wants to maintain relationship with Israel or not. Obviously, Baghdad doesn't want to, but we see the contradiction between Baghdad and Erbil, and we see all the Israelis and CIA in Kurdistan using that part to attack Iran, but that is a long date ago. This goes back to many years. It has been going on. This is not new. And I think Iranian retaliation today was specifically because of the Khorramshahr attack. And the Iranians said that the attack, the planning of the attack, came exactly from the area that was bombed.
Okay, well, let's talk about the U.S. here. And I'm going to come at you, Mostafa Khoshesh, with the response that they have given on what happened today. Elements of the Iranian regime, as they have called it, claim responsibility. They must be held accountable for this flagrant violation of Iraqi sovereignty and terrorist attacks on the property of innocent civilians. Well, what about Syria then when Israel attacks that sovereign nation numerous times throughout the past couple of years, minimum?
You just gave the response, part of the response. They've been attacking the resistance front, and they also attacked Iran, and they martyred two Iranian military attachés. They were working with the Syrian government against terrorists. And that was a third party state. And also, let's remember that the moment you issue permit and the license for using your territory for harming a neighbor's security, you also issue the permit for that neighbor to do reciprocal response. This is very clear. Once a nation comes under attack from a neighbor, from the territory of its one of its neighbors, it reserves the right for that nation to, you know, provide a response. This is very clear. The northern Iraq, the Iraqi Kurdistan region, has become growingly a platform for Israeli Mossad agency. There have been multiple, Mossad stations operating in there. And that's in addition to some other consulates that have been operating in there in order to harm Iranian security. They've been playing as a command center in there. But the specific target of this attack was Israel and the Mossad, and they know it. U.S. National Security Advisor stressed that they have not sustained any kind of casualty. The target has not been the United States, but it's been Mossad, and the precision striking missiles of IRGC hit the target perfectly well. But a third strategy that's here to talk about is the U.S. containment strategy failed against Iran, the containment strategy that relies very much in carrot and stick, on the stick side, the American military threats and sanctions are in the play, and the military threats failed and lost their credibility when Iranian missiles landed on Ain al-Assad, as well as when Iran shut down Trident, or the advanced global hog over the Persian Gulf, after violating Iranian territories and airspace,
right,
and also after the British ship story. So ever since that, the U.S. threats have lost their credibility to change Iranian decision-makings. And they tried, because they are leaving the region and they see that they don't have any efficiency in their military threats. They replace themselves within the Israeli regime to increase their threats towards Iran in order to contain Iran, push Iran towards the talks. So the Israelis have been doing growingly hostile actions against Iran in the past 2 or 3 years. And of course, they have received response for that. If you got more time, I'll explain that probably in the next.
Hopefully. Both, I think, have said that because the U.S. has pulled out of, I guess, the West Asia region, or Iraq maybe. But when you take a look at the way that the U.S., for example, I'm looking at Elijah Magnier, what this Republican politician Lindsey Graham has said, where Iran, he said in Jerusalem, in Al-Quds last month, he would expect more accidents to befall Iranian scientists. And this obviously was in reference to the alleged, which they call alleged, but it's Israeli assassination of Iranian nuclear scientists. When you have U.S. lawmakers making those types of statements, is there a coordination between Israel and the U.S. when it comes to things like the assassination of Iranian nuclear scientists, cyber warfare, or targeting Iranian nuclear facilities, which are all things that Israel, in one way or another, has been involved with or in, even though they've denied it?
This is not a secret. This cooperation between the Israelis and the Americans.
But to what degree is the U.S. involved here?
Yes, so the intelligence cooperation between Israel and the Americans is all over the books written by all the former U.S. officials. And we understand that most of the Israeli Mossad operation are coordinated with the U.S., particularly for one reason. The Mossad is strong only because it enjoys the support of most of the Western country, who offer passport, technology, intelligence, and facility to the Mossad agent. And that is due to the relationship between Israel and the Americans, who are always informed about any attacks, because that has consequences on the political issue that is going on, particularly between Iran and the Americans these days. Now, if we go back a little bit, when the Israelis desperately tried to convince the Americans to bomb Iran and not to sign the JCPOA, and the Americans refused, that's another indication of nothing happened without a full coordination between both sides, the Israelis and the Americans.
Okay. Well, we're quickly running out of time here. I'd like to ask this from you, Mostafa Khoshesh, because I think it's really important. We have talked about throughout the years the investment that Iran has made when it comes to their capabilities on the military front. Of course, we've seen their defensive program make milestones, achievements that are really spectacular. But recently you had the unveiling of two missiles and also these drone bases, which is home to these ground-to-ground missile systems with advanced equipment, and also the fact that you have the announcement made UAVs with a range of 2,000 kilometers. You had what happened with Hezbollah a few weeks back, where one of its unmanned aerial vehicles actually went through Israel and made its way back, and it was not downed. What do you think the viewpoint is from the Israeli lens and the U.S. when it sees this, especially with what happened today?
Well, that needs an hour of explanation, but you're running out of time. And I've got a couple of points to raise in here first. Let me explain this. The Americans have acknowledged that in the past several years, their CIA cells and networks have been dismantled, not just in Iran, but also their informants, operatives, and spies throughout the region, even as far as China. They were disclosed, their identities were revealed, and that was done by Iran. So that's one of the main reasons they were replaced with the Israeli Mossad agency, as they say, and also because they are pulling out and they have failed against Iran in this region, so they need their operatives, the remaining operatives with disclosed identity, to be reassigned to some other geographies. And also because of the containment strategy of the U.S. failed, so they know that they cannot do anything against Iran, so they are replacing the Israeli regime. So these attacks that they do against Iran would continue because of several strategies. Either it's Israeli national security strategy and military doctrine, or because of two U.S. containment and also global strategies that I just explained in the past 10-20 minutes. So this is not going to stop. They continue such attacks, and they will receive a response. I appeared on a number of interviews with foreign outlets, especially Press TV. I said it several times in several interviews, that before the Iranian presidential elections, because of some considerations, Iranian responses were at the same level of the Israeli hostility. But the number, the quality and the graveness of Iran's response would increase after the presidential election. And now we are seeing that. Uh-huh. That's why they marched to Iranian offices. Iran has sent a dozen ballistic missiles and hit very precious targets and assets of Israel in that region. But Iran still says it's just part of the response, because Iran is going to provide a way tougher response now that a revolutionary government is in power. Right. And it knows pretty well that if it doesn't provide a tougher response, there won't be a deterrent factor in here. So to deter further hostilities, it's going to do what I promised several months ago to the Israelis through your program and other outlets, that they will receive several times more responses and tougher responses.
And that's my question to you, Elijah Magner, in under 30 seconds. We know Israel has attacked Syria. It has continued doing that. Do you think there's going to be a response from Israel in this regard, or will it continue its attacks on the sovereign nation of Syria?
The problem with Syria is the Syrian government needs to impose deterrence, and that is up to President Assad. However, I don't think the Israelis will dare to attack any position where the Iranians are deployed, because they expect the retaliation and immediate retaliation in different places, and they don't want to see that, particularly now they are trying to attract all the Israelis and the Jews from Ukraine and other parts of the world.
Thank you very much. We're going to end it there. Elijah Magner from Brussels, veteran journalist and writer. Mostafa Khoshmesh, thank you so much for all that great information. Journalist and political commentator there spoke to us from Tehran. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Tahvei, entire team, it's goodbye until next time.
This is IRIB English Radio. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. From the very heart of evergreen forests, under the starry sky of the desert, with the radiance of silver-colored sand, in the midst of proud mountains. Close up, Iran.
Mitra, an Iranian nature traveler. To know more about the wonders and beauties of magnificent Iran, keep me company. In our country, Iran, as we get close to the end of Iranian calendar year, people prepare themselves for welcoming the new year. One of the traditions of welcoming the new year is Khane Tekani. Based on Khane Tekani tradition, people start cleaning up their homes from any contamination, dust or earth, so in this way, they welcome spring season. The main philosophy of Khane Tekani is making change and development in behavior and clearing heart from hatred. Iranians since old times have been on the idea that by throwing away all unnecessary home appliances as well as cleaning up the necessary items at home, get their home fresh and happy. Some psychologists believe that Khane Tekani gives people the courage to get rid of dependencies. Khane Tekani is the symbol of throwing away bad memories and preparing our mind for saving good, beautiful memories. I am now in my grandma's house. I'm going to help her in Khane Tekani. The first place we Iranians start for cleaning up is the kitchen. Kitchen is a room for preparing food and getting family members together. By cleaning the kitchen, we actually bring back the soul of cleanness and calm home. I'd better make the cupboards empty and then throw away some of the devices, which I'm sure my grandma doesn't use them. And, of course, be careful. She won't understand, because she's interested in keeping unnecessary, useless items. Families were crowded, so everyone helped in Khane Tekhani. However, today families are smaller, and so there will be no choice but to get the house chores done by house cleaning services companies. Well, I've rolled the carpets and I'm waiting for one of these home services companies to come to the door and take these carpets. Here they are. Hi. I've been waiting for you. Oh, well, it's on the second floor. Well, most of the house chores are done. My grandma has also cleaned out the garden and is now planting the violets. And I have made some tea and wait here for my grandma to finish her work and have tea with me. As we Iranians say, this home smells cleanness. I love this smell.
Until next time, goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.